Chapter 23. Two YVH combat droids led Han and Leia along the curved hallway. Only a third of the glow rods in the ceiling were activated, and the shadows in the hallway were deep. Most of the doors from the hall were on the right wall. An occasional door or side passage led away to the left. Marching in lockstep unison, the droids came to a halt before one of the right-hand doors. One of them gestured at it, doubtless transmitting a security code, and it slid up. The droids waited. Leia and Han exchanged a look. Han shrugged, and they entered. The chamber beyond was spacious and airy. The far wall was mostly transparasteel, looking down on a larger chamber. From the doorway, Han and Leia could see the far wall, but not the floor of that chamber. That chamber seemed to be circular and ringed by viewing chambers like this one. It was dimly lit like the hallway. The chamber they stood in was completely unlit. Its only illumination came in through the transparasteel wall and the door, and the latter source of light vanished as the door slid closed behind them. There were chairs and couches scattered throughout the chamber, including a line of high-backed swivel chairs set against the transparasteel wall, and one of them now rotated so that its occupant faced Han and Leia. It was a male human. The dimness made it difficult to make out the man's features, but he seemed to be dark-haired, with handsome but rather bland features. He wore garments that were similar to Han's in cut and style, but all in red and brown hues, and topped by a long-sleeved military-style tunic, unfastened along the front seam for its wearer's comfort. He rose. "Captain Solo, Princess Organa, I'm glad to meet you at last." Han and Leia approached and shook hands with him in turn.
"Prime Minister Tepler," Leia said, "thank you for seeing us, and allow us to offer our condolences on your loss."
"Losses, actually," Tepler corrected. "My brother died defending Idol." Han looked at the man more closely. There was something familiar about the Five-World Prime Minister Pro Tem, and even in the dimness, Han could now make out what it was. Din Jax Tepler was the slightly older, slightly softer-edged image of the Corsec guard who had been with Idol Saxon during their first meeting with her.
"I apologize," Leia said. "We didn't know."
"I shouldn't have mentioned it," Tepler said. "I'm too used to a role as a minister dispensing information. Not used to being a prime minister keeping it all bottled up. Please sit." He gestured to chairs opposite his and resumed his seat. His visitors settled into chairs. Leia said,
"We were surprised to receive your coded communication."
"Surprised that Idol had shared her secrets with me, as we were no longer husband and wife?"
She nodded.
"Well, she didn't. Not exactly."
Even in the poor light, Tepler seemed to lose his focus, his intensity, and Leia felt the man was staring back through time.
"After she died, I received an in-case-of-my-death package from her. Her dealings with you were part of that package. Also, part of it was an apology for getting me killed." Han frowned. "She hasn't, has she?"
"Not yet, and I'm likely to remain alive as long as certain parties see me as an asset rather than a liability."
Tepler shrugged. "I'd like to remain alive. I'd prefer that even to coordinating Corellian government. But most of all, I want to keep Corellia from being ruined, devastated by war, her economy depleted by a lengthy struggle against the Galactic Alliance, or, perhaps worst of all, her economy and critical faculties drained away by years of rule under the wrong regime."
The Solos nodded. Tepler was obviously speaking of Chief Sal Solo and his political allies.
"And that's why I've asked you here," Tepler continued. "To defend my people, my world, I'm going to commit an act of high treason. I've smuggled you in here, into the most secure portions of our War Department facilities,
so you can be a witness to a meeting I'm forbidden to attend.
Forbidden?
Leia arched a brow.
How can they forbid you?
By having more pressing matters scheduled for me during this meeting.
Tepler looked increasingly glum.
With my brother dead, and never having gone through the process of building myself a reliable, loyal society of conspirator allies, I haven't had anyone I can trust with me since Idol's death, which my political opponents know all too well. I'm the perfect front man, hapless and helpless. And then Idol's message about you two comes to me, and I discover that perhaps the most incorruptible Corellian of all is visiting us on the sly and willing to risk his home, his relationship with his own government, in the interest of keeping people alive and keeping his homeworld intact.
Han felt shock creep across his face.
Incorruptible? When did I become incorruptible?
Leia grinned at him. It's your stubborn pride, dear. It keeps you from accepting the wrong kind of bribe.
Hello? Smuggler?
Ex-smuggler.
Leia returned her attention to Tepler and sobered.
You actually want us to spy on this meeting?
Yes, a top-secret military meeting. It's supposed to deal with throwing the GA forces off Tralles.
Leia frowned at him.
And why do you think I'd refrain from telling the GA military about the plans we listened to?
The Prime Minister gave her a sad stare.
Because you know as well as I do that there can't be a peace initiative until the GA is off Tralles. The GA can't negotiate their departure because that's already been tried and failed. The GA can't just leave because it would be too great a loss of face, even greater than being driven off, because it suggests they were wrong in the first place, and the Corellians won't even start thinking about peaceful solutions while there's an occupying force on Tralles.
His expression graduated from sad to positively miserable.
There can't be peace until an act of war drives the GA out of this system, and you know it. And if you were to tell the GA government our plans, we couldn't succeed at driving them out. It's as simple as that.
Leia was silent for a long moment. Finally, she said, I've underestimated you, Prime Minister. You're more calculating than I thought.
Aren't I, though?
He offered her a self-deprecating smile.
At this rate, I wonder whether, when assassins or war trial executioners come for me, I'll welcome what they have to offer.
He shrugged.
As for now, the only forces I know are loyal to me are 4 YVH droids my brother programmed for my security. I'm hoping that after you've witnessed this meeting, you can tell me if there are any others, or at least confirm the disloyalty of others, I suspect. It would be helpful.
We'll consider it, Han said. I think we'll watch your little meeting, and then decide what to do.
That's about as much as I could ask for.
Tepler rose, and the Solos did as well.
My droids will be back for you when it's safe to smuggle you out of here. In the meantime, the polarizing tint on the viewport here and the darkness of this chamber will prevent anyone below from seeing you.
Meaning we shouldn't turn on the lights, Han said, deadpan. Tepler stared at him a long moment, then managed a slight smile.
Meaning exactly that.
Once she was set up before the computer console in Thrakken's quarters, it took Mara just short of 3 minutes to crack his security. First was the medical portion of the identification process. She used a dropper tube to place a single drop of Thrakken's blood onto a sensor needle resting in a depression on the console surface. The blood, taken during one of his visits to a doctor, had been more recently purchased, surreptitiously and at an extravagant price, by Galactic Alliance Intelligence. Then there were his fingerprints. The transparent, almost undetectable glove Mara wore bore his prints and was sufficient for most security purposes. Third, there was visual confirmation. Just before the computer got to that portion of its security sequence, Mara activated a small holoprojector scanner unit that detected her face, mapped it, and projected a three-dimensional representation of Thraken's features over her own. No living creature would be fooled by the device. Thraken's face glowed, and the effect was made worse in the dimness of his chambers. But the computer scanner accepted the image. After that, it was a matter of entering the correct password. Mara got it on the third try. Tew, now leaning over her shoulder, asked,
"What was it?"
"The name of one of his mistresses." Mara shook her head over the obviousness of that choice. "Now let's go prowling." And prowl she did, downloading everything she looked at into her own datapad. Not that it amounted to much. "He apparently forwards all his files and records to a system in the government halls," she complained. "He's very tidy. Not good for us."
"So this was all for nothing?"
Tew's serene Jedi mask cracked for just a moment.
"All those days of terrible, spicy Corellian food?"
Mara grinned. "Maybe not for nothing. We just need to look farther afield." She found security procedures and passwords that would make subsequent departures from and entries into this building much easier. Until they were changed, that is. She found poorly hidden personal files kept on the building's computer system by its security operatives, many of them constituting blackmail evidence against fellow agents, private citizens, and low-level government officials. And then she found what she was looking for, an incoming message from several days earlier. "To Thraken Sal Solo, Chief of State, Corellia. All greetings and respects," she read. "Let me begin this communication by offering you a gift, the gift of knowledge. The impending meeting between representatives of the Corellian and Galactic Alliance governments will take place on Toriaz Station, Kuat System." Well, he or she was right about that.
"Who sent it?"
Tew asked. "But sadly, this gift is incomplete by itself, as security at the station will be formidable. Fortunately, I have information on that matter, too. I can provide exact details on the locations of all delegates at all times, as well as the security measures guarding them, for the duration of their stay here."
"Here?"
Tew repeated.
"So whoever wrote him was already on Toriaz Station?"
"Not necessarily. The word choice could be deliberate, to convince Thraken of just that detail. Should this information be of interest to you, please contact me on the holonet frequency indicated below at the times shown. Standard encryption, using the contents of my next message as the encryption key. Then there's the time and frequency information."
"No name?"
"No name." Mara scanned the file listing for follow-up messages with the same characteristics as this one. "I'm not seeing any sign of the message with the encryption key. It was probably delivered by other means."
"I'm not feeling any animosity toward the sender of that message."
"You're not?"
Mara looked up at Tew, surprised.
"No. So it's all right for me to kill him, correct?"
Mara grinned.
"Self-deception is always a bad idea, Tew.
Except when it amuses a Jedi Master."
"Well, true."
Tew sobered.
"But the fact that Thraken received this message doesn't mean that he paid for that information. He isn't necessarily the one responsible for the attack."
"Yes, he is. Regardless of whether he received the second information and dispatched the killers, not reporting it to Korsak and Prime Minister Saxon constitutes treason, betrayal. Whether he arranged for assassins or just sat on information, he's at least partly to blame for Saxon's death and the mess we're in."
"Oh."
Tew brightened.
"Well, then, I'm not feeling animosity toward him, either. Can I?
No.
Mara glanced up, as though she could see through intervening floors into the chamber by which she'd entered the bunker.
That escape craft, is it hyperdrive equipped?
It is.
But I assume that if we were to board it and blast out of here, we'd have Corsac fighters on our tail in a few moments.
I wondered about that, too, and I had no way to confirm or disprove that as a theory, but I doubt it.
Explain.
It's for Thraken to escape in. One of the things he might want to escape from is a vengeful pursuit by new government forces that have chased him out of office, and those government forces could put Corsac on his tail. So my bet is he's given it transponder codes that will be registered as good and valid no matter what, until all traces of Thraken are scoured out of the computers.
Mara nodded approvingly.
Which could take a while, particularly if I pump some malicious code into this machine and wait long enough for associated computers to sample it too. What say we steal Thraken's escape vehicle? If we don't accumulate any pursuit, we can pick up my husband and go home. If we do, we can dump it over there in the ocean and leave Corellia by the route we'd planned originally.
I like this plan.
Half an hour after Prime Minister Tepler's departure, politicians and military officers began entering the room beneath Tepler's viewing chamber. They traveled in groups, one important dignitary backed by 3 to 5 members of support staff, with the dignitary and one aide seating themselves at the large triangular table dominating the room, the others exiled to secondary tables or far corners, there to remain until summoned. As these people spoke in their small groups, Han and Leia could occasionally make out their words, whenever they were projected across the table or the room. Soon enough, Han realized that they were being augmented by a set of speakers in the wall beneath the long viewport. Eventually, the highest-ranking officer so far, Admiral Vara Karathis, Chief of Staff for the Ministry of War and operational leader of the Corellian military, entered with her retinue. All the other officers straightened, looking busier and more efficient, and the big chamber's upper lights came on in full strength. What's keeping them? Han frowned down at the military officers below. They're still not starting. We were more prompt back in the Rebel Alliance days.
You weren't, you specifically.
No, but we were, when you didn't wait for me. Even from the altitude of the viewport side chairs in Prime Minister Tepler's box, Admiral Karathis looked years older than the last time Han had laid eyes on her. A Holonews spot broadcast the day of their first meeting with Idol Saxon. There were no more lines to Karathis's face, no more gray to her hair, but the ramrod straight military rigidity that always seemed to characterize her had apparently fled. Her posture now was that of a tired woman, and her face seemed softer, no longer stretched into taut planes and sharp angles by unyielding muscles. She didn't look beaten, but she did look beatable. Han grimaced, not appreciating the change. Standing at one truncated point of the triangular table, Karathis pointedly drew a chrono out of a jacket pocket and consulted it. As she did so, several of the other officers glanced in the direction of Tepler's box. Beneath it, actually, and a trifle to the left, and exchanged eye contact and words with one another, reacting to some new arrival and indicating that, at last, things might proceed. From the direction they had been looking, Wedge Antilles, again in Corellian uniform, walked into the room, without retinue. Admiral Karathis gave Wedge a wan smile.
"Cutting it rather close, aren't you, Antilles?"
She projected her voice sufficiently that it was clearly audible in Tepler's box. That, and perhaps the microphones that fed Tepler's speakers, were oriented more toward the main table than other portions of the chamber. Wedge nodded and moved up to the table beside Karathis.
"Admiral, if I had a credit for every time someone told me that..."
"Yes, you could probably buy our way out of this situation..."
Karathis looked up, in a direction disconcertingly close to where Han and Leia sat, but her eyes seemed to be focused on a point to their left, beyond the wall that separated them from the next room.
Are we all ready? Yes, then let's begin. Please sit.
She did as she suggested, and there was a momentary delay as some officers fled the main table and others trotted up to it, seating themselves.
All right, Carathis said. We find ourselves in the unenviable, unacceptable but unavoidable position of having to wage a battle against enemy forces occupying the center of one of our own cities. We cannot do this without a gruesome toll in the lives of our own people, which could very well swing public opinion against us, which would be increasingly harmful to our defense of the Corellian system. Nor can we just ignore the enemy beachhead, as leaving it intact will allow them to reinforce it, expand it, and begin bringing more and more potent offenses against our in-system positions. Their command post in Relidir on Trollis has to be obliterated, and so Operation Noble Savage has been designed to obliterate it, and to turn what would be a public opinion disaster into an asset.
Her voice did not convey military confidence. If anything, it carried more than a hint of regret, and even resentment. Han saw Leia shiver. He gave her a questioning look.
She didn't say anything about minimizing expected civilian deaths, she said.
Han leaned forward to give Carathis a closer look.
Maybe she's getting to that.
Maybe.
Below, Carathis gestured to someone out in the shadows along the big room's walls. A hologram sprang into existence above the center of the table. A view of the center of the city of Relidir, inverted so that those at the table looking up were actually looking down into the monolithic block of skyscrapers as if from a great height. Some wavered at the unsettling perspective, but most were or had been pilots, amateur, professional, or military, and had no problem with the view. The disc-shaped hologram began a slow rotation, and then a large region at the center of it, a massive, circular white building with eight narrowing points around its rim, giving it the appearance of a royal crown, began blinking. Red-white, red-white. The building was easy to make out among all the skyscrapers, as it was surrounded by a broad belt of green, occasionally decorated with narrow gray lines. A large city park with foot trails tracing through it. Small wireframe objects in blinking red were scattered around the building, arrayed in rows and columns, but they were too small for Han to make out. A few larger wireframes in the same color scheme appeared to be troop transports and corvettes.
This, Carathis continued, is their command post. They have occupied the Navos Center for the Performing Arts. This was a very good choice, speaking from a military point of view. It's commodious, has an extensive underground storage area not accessible through any of the city's normal underground infrastructure, and commands a good view of the surrounding airspace. Shield generators have been set up inside, powering a two-level shield defensive system.
On cue, a hologram wire grid of defensive energy shields appeared, blinking on and off in orange, just outside the green park areas surrounding the command post. And another wire grid, this one in red, began blinking several blocks out in all directions, a greater dome enclosing the smaller dome.
It's also sound strategically, because the center is right in the heart of one of the most densely occupied portions of central Relidir, the Admiral continued. Any standard action waged there will result in thousands of civilian casualties. One concussion missile missing its target could bring down an entire superhabitat building, and inevitably there will be missiles missing their targets. Many of them. Our grim task has been to turn that terrible but inevitable consequence of war to our advantage.
Carathis's voice was raspy and faint on those last words.
However, despite their good choices, the GA has made some poor ones, too. situating several starfighter squadrons and some planet-landable fighting vessels around their command post as a show of strength, gives us more things to destroy. Explosively. Catastrophically. And most important, recordably, when we do hit that site.
This is bad, 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 Han said. He couldn't keep an edge of anger out of his voice. The wire grid shield indicators began blinking more erratically.
In the first part of our operation, the Admiral continued, teams of commandos will be infiltrated into Relidir. They will attempt to reach the shield generators and destroy them with high explosives. Success on their part is to be considered a bonus to our plan, but the plan does not rely on it.
Who came up with this plan? Han didn't speak loudly enough to be heard down on the floor or in adjacent observation chambers, but his voice was rising. C-3PO could have done better. This is exactly what the GA is going to be expecting. He could see Leia tense. It couldn't be in response to his anger. She was used to that. She had to be growing unhappier because she suspected the plan was going to get even worse. On the upside-down view of Relidir, half a dozen green dots appeared at various points along the view's rim and sped toward the enemy command post, each followed by a stream of red dots.
In the second part of the operation, the Admiral continued, Corellian YT-5100 Shriek-class bombers will assault the shielded region from all sides, closely pursued by Galactic Alliance starfighters and warships. They will bombard the shields, if any survive, and then continue their bombardment of the command post until it is destroyed.
The Admiral mopped her brow with her sleeve. Her voice turned pained.
The Shriek-class bombers have been chosen because they are distinctly, uniquely, unmistakably Corellian. Designed by the Corellian Engineering Corporation, they have not entered full production yet. Only 10 late-model prototypes and a few earlier prototypes are in existence.
The city view abruptly winked out of existence and was replaced by a slowly spinning view of a sleek gray saucer shape with forward-projecting mandible, like a streamlined Millennium Falcon without the side-mounted cockpit projection.
The pursuing spacecraft, Carathus continued, though bearing the colors and insignia of vehicles and vessels of the Galactic Alliance fleet, will actually be units of the Corellian Defense Force. Instead of shooting down the Shrieks, other than hitting them with a few reduced-strength laser blasts for cosmetic effect, their mission will be to reinforce the firepower of those bombers and to reassign blame for civilian deaths to the Galactic Alliance.
Silence fell in the wake of the Admiral's words. Leia put her face into her hands, not an expression of grief, but a way to keep her composure. Han took a long, deep breath. It had gotten worse. Wedge turned a brilliant, bitter smile on the Admiral.
It would seem, he said, that the plan would actually benefit if we maximized civilian casualties.
Leia lifted her head, her eyes wide. Admiral Carathus's face relaxed into a non-expression, as though she'd just been hit by a blaster set to stun.
General Antilles, that might be the most callous thing I've ever heard you say.
Wedge looked scornful and made a dismissive gesture.
Admiral, let's call a skifter a skifter. Operation Noble Savage is, as you yourself said, designed to take what is inevitably going to be a public relations nightmare, the deaths of thousands of civilians from friendly fire, and turn it to the advantage of the Corellian independence cause. It will take outrage that would have been directed against us and turn it against our opponents. That outrage will stiffen Corellian resistance against the GA, allowing us to hit harder, more ferociously. By an inevitable progression of logic, the more horrible the offense we can blame on the GA forces, the greater that outrage. Correct?
Carathis blinked. Finally, her face resumed the hard angles and planes that had characterized it for most of her adulthood.
General, I'm within seconds of ordering you to shut up and leave this council.
That would be a mistake,
Wedge said. His voice was as hard as Carathis's had become.
If you did that, you'd prevent me from showing you how to achieve your military objectives without wantonly killing fellow Corellians. And let me point out that Operation Noble Savage, though it would probably divert the population's outrage from our military to the GA, drastically increases the odds that we will go to war. Our population wouldn't easily back away from further confrontations if all those lives on Trollis remained unavenged, would it?
Carathis paused. The respect with which most Corellian military officers held Antilles, and the Admiral's own evident discontent with the plan just outlined, obviously kept in check any outrage she might have felt at being addressed in that fashion. Leia felt only so much sympathy for the woman, however. Carathis had bought into a plan that was ghastly. Leia would have had far more respect for her had some other officer, Carathis's replacement, been explaining this mission, meaning that Carathis had been replaced for her opposition to Noble Savage. A square of light fell across the table as another of the observation rooms was illuminated from within. Its occupant had obviously turned on its interior light so as to be seen from below. Han and Leia looked around the bank of observation booths, but none they could see was now illuminated, meaning that the one they were looking for had to be close to theirs. Then a voice, electronically amplified, boomed from the room just to their left.
General, am I to understand that the operation I helped design, that I approved and am ready to set into motion, is wanton?
Leia winced, and Han felt like drawing his blaster. That cutting voice was distinctive, instantly recognizable. It was Thrakken Sal Solo. Han also felt a little foolish. Of course the Corellian Chief of State would have a viewing chamber near the Five World Prime Ministers. Of course Thrakken would be here to observe this meeting. Han glanced to the left, toward the source of Thrakken's voice. On the other side of a thin wall was a man who'd given him grief across decades. He whispered, "It's sort of like being a kid again, hiding in your bed because there's a monster in the closet." Despite herself, Leia grinned. Han mimed drawing his blaster and aiming it at the wall to his left. He wondered how many shots it would take for him to hit Thrakken under these circumstances, and whether he and Leia could get out of the building afterward. It was probably not wise to try. Not this time. He sighed and mimed reholstering his weapon. Wedge turned to face Sal Solo's viewport, meaning he was staring almost directly up into Han and Leia's as well.
"No, sir," he said. "As I'm sure your protocol droid is now telling you, my use of the word wanton referred to the unnecessary deaths of so many of our kinfolk and fellow citizens. And there's the additional factor that while this group might be able to maintain for years the terrible secret that we were responsible for those deaths, we wouldn't be able to keep it forever. Secrets, like hydraulic fluids, have a nasty habit of seeping out into the open just when it's worst for everybody."
Sal Solo's voice boomed again.
"Was that a threat, Antilles?"
Wedge made a dismissive gesture Han knew would have to outrage Sal Solo.
"No, it was a realistic appraisal, and my realistic appraisal of Operation Noble Savage suggests to me that it would be effective, and that it would probably succeed, but that it would not be efficient. To be efficient, it would have to accomplish our goals with minimal loss of civilian life, and with a chance to reduce, instead of increase, our chance to enter a full-scale shooting war. And can you do all that, General, and put a shine on your reputation while you're at it? I can. And put a shine on your reputation. Since you're the military commander-in-chief approving an operation that might not rid the system of scores of thousands of loyal Corellians.
Han saw Leia holding her breath. Wedge was playing a tricky game here, appealing to Sal Solo's political instincts of self-preservation, but still batting the man's words back into his teeth. Perhaps Wedge was getting too tired to keep his politics soft-spoken and pleasing. Perhaps, like Han, he hated Sal Solo so much that he simply couldn't bear to accommodate the man.
"Let's hear it," Sal Solo said. "If I like what I hear, you might not find yourself begging on a street corner come morning."
Wedge turned his back on the man's booth. From a breast pocket, he removed a data pad. Looking around, he apparently spotted the room's hologram input sensor. He pointed the data pad at it, and abruptly the hologram image overhead changed. Once again, it was the center of Relidir, but a less realistic plotting of it. The skyscrapers were all simple gray rectangles, their windows, balconies, and decorations not represented. A moment after the hologram resolved into crisp detail, dome-like translucences in pink appeared to show the two sets of shields maintained by the Galactic Alliance occupiers.
"Same problem, different solution," Wedge said.
On the hologram, two flights of green blips, six blips per flight, two half-squadrons, appeared at the edges of the displayed region, the first from one angle, and the second from an angle 90 degrees to that of the first. The first flight overflew the shield-protected region. A moment later, the second flight followed suit. Now red dots appeared on the display, in numbers rapidly swelling from 20 to 100, and formed up to follow the green dots. Both the pursued and the pursuers exited the scene within moments.
"Stage one," Wedge continued, "is a diversionary bombing run on the shields. Standard operational procedure to overload shields and bring them down. Given that the GA occupiers have not only installed military power generators at the site, but also commandeered city power generators and can feed them straight into their shields, the shields possess a lot of power. This run will fail, and the bombers will make a quick bounce up to orbit, drawing off a certain amount of pursuit."
Wedge tapped another button on his data pad. Just barely within the outer perimeter of the shields, a massive gray building began to blink in color, alternating between green and yellow.
"This is the Turkery housing complex, currently under construction, being built on the site of an old complex that had to be deconstructed for safety reasons. The new complex will be somewhat more upscale than many of the surrounding housing units, providing modern amenities and a broad underground hangar area for private skimmers, shuttles, and the like."
Sal Solo's voice was richly mocking.
"You almost make me want to live there." "At the moment, sir, it's not a very good investment. Stage two of this operation involves taking a couple of those Shriek-class bombers and flying them clean through the Turkery housing complex, then continuing on to the Arts Center and initiating its destruction."
Sal Solo cleared his throat, the electronically augmented sound echoing off the chamber's walls.
"Surely, given your reputation for military strategy, you've noticed that the housing complex you propose to fly through is enclosed within their shields?"
"Yes, sir."
"And you don't see this as a problem?"
"No, sir."
"And correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm familiar with the payload that a Shriek bomber can carry, and it seems to me that two of them would not be able to carry enough ordnance to punch through two rings of shields and then destroy the shield generators themselves.
That's correct, sir. I've compensated for that factor by planning for the shrieks to be carrying almost no ordnance at all.
There was a long pause before Sal Solo replied, and Han could imagine the man standing there, his expression pained, no words emerging. Finally, Sal Solo said,
"You're right on the verge of that street corner I was mentioning, Antilles."
Wedge glanced over his shoulder up at Sal Solo, an amused expression that all but said,
"You shouldn't interrupt when grown-ups are talking."
He raised his data pad and thumbed another button. The angle of the schematic changed, dropping the point of view until it was oriented mere meters over a broad thoroughfare. At the far end of the thoroughfare was the blinking green and yellow building.
"I mentioned," Wedge said, "the housing complex's broad underground hangar."
The hologram's point of view went into motion, traveling toward the blinking building at a high rate of speed.
"Here you can see a simulation of the Shriek Bomber's approach toward the housing complex. When they get to the distance of a few blocks, they release some of their ordnance."
Blue-dotted lines leapt forward toward the blinking building, but dropped at the last moment to strike the thoroughfare just ahead of it.
"And blow a broad hole in the avenue. Straight down into the hangar area. They fly through the hangar, blowing out an exit ahead of them, and emerge through that hole on the far side, then continue on to their target. As they approach their target, they release their payload of targeter droids, rather crude droids, used by our armed forces to teach sharpshooting and ballistics. Those droids use laser rangefinders and other sensors to paint their target, defining not just the command center, but a precise point on its shielding."
"And then?"
Finally, Sal Solo sounded interested rather than mocking.
"And then, the hundreds of missiles fired in the wake of the two shrieks, following the telemetry sent by those targeter droids, come pouring out of the hangar bay, hit that point on the shields, overload them until they fail, and continue on to hit the command post, plus the vehicles and vessels on the ground, surgically eradicating them."
"They could still overfly their target,"
Admiral Carathis said. Wedge nodded.
"As surgical as we'd like for this operation to be, we can't eliminate all risk of friendly fire fatalities. Believe me, I'd love to. But one thing we can do is have the targeter droids make their target the summit of the enemy shields, then the summit of the command post building. We can program our missiles to go as high as possible once they exit the hangar, then dive on their target from above. The likelihood of them shooting past a target and hitting the side of an occupied building is thereby reduced."
"Let me make sure I understand,"
Sal Solo said.
"Your two Shriek Bombers, they'll be sustaining fire from any GA defenses not drawn off by our diversion."
"Correct,"
Wedge said.
"That means gunships, starfighters, anti-spacecraft gun emplacements, and who knows what else."
"Correct."
"How do they do this?"
"Well," Wedge said, "first, the performance characteristics of the Shrieks are known to the GA government, but since the bombers aren't in production yet, that information hasn't been widely distributed. It's not likely to be in the databases of the GA forces around Trollis. This means the defenders won't know exactly what to expect from these machines. Second, the fact that the assault force seems inadequate to the task means the forces arrayed against the Shrieks will probably not be overwhelming. And third, I plan to choose, assuming I'm selected to implement this plan, otherwise I'll just recommend, pilots who are especially well-suited to this sort of mission. I don't mean the pilots who've been testing the Shrieks, good men and women though they are. I mean canny old veterans who have decades of experience with YT-series spacecraft, pilots familiar with terrain-following assaults and other seemingly suicidal flying techniques.
Han leaned farther forward, almost pressing his forehead against the transparasteel, his attention fixed on Wedge. He heard Leia whisper, "Oh, no." Thrakken, sounding cheerful, boomed,
"Admiral Carathis, I think this plan deserves close scrutiny."